And joining us on Perspectives today is Ryan Gaddis. The book is called All Involved, a novel, and this is something that we taped this in May of 2015, so it's very timely at the time when we taped this interview, and things have changed a lot. But Ryan, thank you very much for being with us here today, and we'll talk a little bit about why this thing was timely when we taped it. But welcome to the show, and thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, thanks for having me. Looking forward to it.
Now, tell us a little bit about yourself, Ryan, a little bit about, you know, your writing. Have you always wanted to be a writer, and, you know, growing up and how things have changed or not changed?
You know, I'm originally from Colorado Springs.
Oh.
I'm from a military family, Air Force. My grandfather was a colonel. My father was a captain. And I was born on Scott Air Force Base in Illinois. When I was about a year old, my father moved us to the Springs and bought a house that looked down on the Air Force Academy. You could see the chapel from the house, and he basically told my brother and I, that's where you're going to go. And I was on that path. You know, I was on the path to going to the academy. I had been a varsity soccer player for a few years and was at the top of my class academically. I'd done all the other extracurricular activities that were, you know, would really put me in a favorable light for admission. But then when I was 17 years old, I actually had a pretty awful accident occur. You know, I got hit in the face so hard that it actually tore the cartilage out of my nose. And I had to have two facial reconstructive surgeries. And it was about a year, really, before the nerves reattached and I was able to taste and smell effectively. And I think, you know, up to that point, that real turning point in my life, all I wanted to be was a soldier. But afterward, you know, so much of my recovery time was spent reading and watching movies that by the time it was done, I really just wanted to be a storyteller. And I think that was really what kind of set me on this path to being a writer and a novelist.
Now, you mentioned that accident. It sounds horrible. Was that playing soccer?
No, it actually happened in a high school classroom.
Oh, my gosh.
I was walking into a student council class, and a football player who was actually tripping on acid at the time decided that he wanted to play fight with me. And, you know, I said no and turned away, you know, and as Hunter S. Thompson says, never turn your back on a drug, you know, but I hadn't read any Hunter S. Thompson yet at that time, wish I had. And just as I was turning, his elbow caught me in such a way as to not break the nasal bone, but to actually smash all the cartilage out of there. And you'd be amazed at how much cartilage you have that goes pretty far up into your skull. So it was an extremely traumatic injury, and it took a lot of work to kind of...
Now, as time progressed and you got better, and as you mentioned, you got interested in storytelling, what about your father and your grandfather? What did they think about your decision at that point?
I think because of the nature of the injury, there wasn't a lot of negativity or difficulty from either of them. I mean, my father in particular was with me in the room for what's called a closed reduction, when they basically take a metal rod and they try to set your nose back. And unfortunately, they hadn't waited for the anesthetic. So that was, without question, the most painful thing I've ever experienced in my life. It really set the bar for pain for me. But I think seeing as how my dad was in the room and he saw the blood and he was holding my hand when it happened, you know, I didn't hear much from him. I know there was some disappointment. I know there were some high hopes for that, but I think they understood. You know, in a way, telling stories and really listening to people, being empathetic, connecting with people, and finding ways to write and reach people through that. I think they understood. And
you actually dedicated this book to your grandfather, correct?
I sure did. Yeah.
We're visiting with Ryan Gaddis, and Ryan has written a novel called All Involved, and this is a novel that goes back to 19, 92, when you open up, it takes you day by day in things that are happening. But it talks about the involvement with the police in 1992, a jury acquitting three white L.A. police officers charged with using excessive force to subdue a black man named Rodney King. And they failed to reach a verdict on the same charges involving a fourth officer. So this was something that the media was on this. Everybody was talking about it. You read about it. You heard about it. And what made you decide to focus on this issue in your novel?
Well, you know, there were a few reasons, but I think as far as really settling on the 92 riots as a spark point that would help with a book or really be worth exploring in a book, you know, the first reason was it offered a really natural structure. It lasted 6 days. So once I knew that, I already had a sense of what the beginning, middle, and end would be, because I had a sense of what the beginning, middle, and end of the riots would be. Now, you mentioned that, you know, an awful lot of people had been talking about it. You know, documentaries have been made, plenty of news articles, magazine articles, all kinds of writing about this period and this awful 6 days, but very little fiction. And I was absolutely shocked when I started digging into that. I thought, you know, for certain somebody has written a novel about this time, and you know what I could find. You know, I'm sure someone has, but to this point, really, all I found is that Hector Tobar, you know, wrote The Tattooed Soldier, and the last maybe four or five chapters take place during the '92 riots. But by and large, the book is about something else entirely. And I just thought, you know, what a unique opportunity this is to explore in fiction to get into characters' heads. You know, really, I think such a shocking event in American history that even to this day, many viewers at that time and potentially readers even now, you know, are wondering why and how could that happen. And I think fiction provides a really unique vehicle because it offers an interior perspective. You can get inside a character's head, see their thought process as well as their actions. And, you know, I base that on really 2.5 years of research, you know, and really kind of talking to people and seeing what that time felt like, smelled like, looked like, sounded like, and really tried to channel that into the book.
We're visiting with Ryan Gaddis. He is the author of the book All Involved. It's a novel about the 1992 L.A. riots. And in this work of fiction, as Ryan mentioned, it's set in a part of Los Angeles County that was ignored by the media during the riots. And he tells about 17 first-person narratives that paint a portrait of not just the city, but our country itself, laying down our history, prejudice, and everything else. And Ryan, when you were researching and writing this book, even though, as we have mentioned, it's a novel, it's a work of fiction, it's a work of fiction that sometimes people may read and go, you know, this could happen, or this did happen. And because you wrote it as a novel, do you feel that perhaps people will read it and pick it up more, than it'll stick more in their, you know, memories and hearts because it's a story and not a new story? Because after a while, people, every channel they tuned to, every paper they got, it was about the same thing, and they wanted a different angle.
Sure. I absolutely hope it'll stick yes. in minds and hearts, you know, primarily because stories are different in different mediums. You know, a news story is primarily informational. It's relatively straightforward. It's there to give us the facts. A story in fiction is there to give us how it feels, you know, what it looks like, what it might have been like to be there, provided that the first-person perspective, you know, unfolds in a relatively chronological way and doesn't jump all over the place. But because I had these 6 days to work with, I did my utmost to really contain the stories and make them not just present, but impactful. As far as, you know, the question of fiction, you know, I think any good fiction relies on detail, you know, really, really strong detail to make it, you know, to allow that reader to say, hey, you know, wow, this seems so real, or this could happen. I think, you know, if you're doing that the right way, that's exactly how you want your reader to feel. And you know, as far as I was concerned, when I went to talk with nurses and firefighters and former gang members, you know, I was very straightforward. And I said, look, you know, I don't need your stories. I'm not a nonfiction writer. I'm not a magazine writer. You know, I'm interested in the tenor of the time, the spirit of the time. And I would ask, you know, relatively specific questions about, hey, what were people wearing? What were people listening to? There were 11,000 fires at that time. What did the city smell like? You know, and getting those details and getting them from people who were there, I think really helps elevate the fiction to a level that, you know, hopefully it will stick with people.
As you were writing this and researching, as you mentioned, I just mentioned that one of the reviews, you know, talks about that your book lays down our bare history, our prejudice and everything else that, you know, dark chapters in history. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the interview that we're taping this in May of 2015, things, you know, the more things change, the more they stay the same, as someone said.
Sure. I mean, you mentioned earlier that it was, that the book was timely, and I suppose it is, but I don't know how timely it is. It might be, and this isn't an ego issue, but it might be timeless right now only because a lot of these underlying issues have not changed. You know, in the book, there's a character who talks about the Zoot Suit riots in the 30s in Los Angeles, and he talks about the Watts riots in 65, and then he sees 1992 as on this continuum, this almost cycle of riots that continuously engulfs LA, and he even extrapolates forward and says, well, okay, in 2022, you know, there'll be more riots, but hopefully in 2022 it'll be robots versus people. And of course he's making a joke, but I think that masks a darker truth that, especially in Los Angeles, as far as in the more impoverished neighborhoods, you know, many things have not changed. And certainly, I think the way that the police were interacting with these communities, especially communities of color, from the 30s to the 90s, I'm sad to say very little had actually changed in terms of engagement and even pursuit, if they perceive someone to have committed a crime. You know, one of the things that was fascinating and heartbreaking to hear during my research, you know, whether I was in Linwood or Southgate or anywhere else, I was told, look, every neighborhood has a Rodney King, black or brown. You know, everybody knew someone who had been beaten up, fairly or unfairly. So I think, in a way, that's an important thing to remember. And when we think about some of the foundational elements as well, the fact that even today, Linwood doesn't have an educational system on par with some of the better areas of Los Angeles. There aren't as many after-school programs as there should be, and there certainly aren't as many job opportunities. And when those things continue to persist, I think there is potentially tinder for another conflagration.
And what about as far as putting pressure and applying, perhaps things can change, but as you mentioned, you know, perhaps not, our police departments, because a lot of times, you know, we hear about the city's finest and this is what they do for us, this is what they've done for us. And unfortunately, the good side of the police officers or whatever they do every day to protect, that doesn't come out and is covered up by the negative.
It's a tremendously difficult job. And I think perhaps what we need to seek more of, and again, I'm a novelist, I'm a writer. I am not, a sociologist or an expert on police procedure, but it seems to me that we need to do two things. I think we need to increase empathy in the police department, and I think one of the issues, and I heard this from former gang members, and I heard it from firefighters, from both sides. They both believe it's a problem, that the police don't live in these neighborhoods where they police. They work and then they go home. They go far away, and I think it sends a really powerful message, certainly in Los Angeles, to a community like, hey, you know, we don't value you enough you're different from us, and we don't value you enough to be part of this city and this culture here. And that, I think, is a potentially really damaging message to send. And the firefighters felt similarly. You know, when they are in the station houses, they live there. They live in the communities. They shop at the markets. They cook at the station houses. So they know people there in ways that many of the police officers do not. And they did voice to me worried that occasionally that made their jobs a lot harder. You know, they wear Navy uniforms, and LAPD wear Navy uniforms, and sometimes they found that if something negative or awful had happened, that people weren't distinguishing and weren't necessarily seeing the good that the firefighters were doing. You know, the only other thing I'd say is you know, we really need some balance as far as the training is concerned. You know, the level of force that's used in some of these situations is worrisome, to say the least. You know, gosh, the video from North Carolina is absolutely heartbreaking. You know, I guess the only other thing that's potentially important to say is I don't know where that balance is. I don't know how to find it. You know, part of my job as a novelist is to ask questions, and so my question is, how can we empower the police to still make important, logical decisions in the heat of the moment, but also find ways to value human life, and certainly when they work in communities of color.
We're visiting with Ryan Gaddis. Ryan is the author of the novel All Involved, which focuses on the 1992 L.A. riots, where officers were acquitted using excessive force with Rodney King. This incident, as you mentioned, it's a novel, it's a work of fiction. When you were out doing these interviews and you told the people that it was a fiction book you were writing, how did they react to that, Ryan?
You know, it was interesting. I think in a way it opened some doors. If I had gone to people and said, you know, I'm a magazine writer or I'm a newspaper writer and I'm interested in your story, you know, certainly with the former gang members, it would have shut them down. You know, I don't think they would be interested in that at all. But when I came to them and I said, hey, you know, I'm interested in telling, you know, a story that gets to the heart of this, that really shoots for the spirit and the pain and the difficulty, but as well as the hope and the family and the love that went on at this time, you know, I got a very different reaction. I think, you know, it allowed people to relax a little bit and know that they weren't under the microscope. That really I was looking to them for guidance and perspective, and as I mentioned before, some of those really key, important details that can help speak to the place and the time.
And how did you go about selecting the narratives and the people that you were going to feature in your book?
You know, I think for me, I always, the first character was Payasa on day one. And I had to write a female gang member. I felt compelled to do it. I wish I could explain to you the entire thought process of that. I can't. I think as a writer, sometimes a character comes to you and insists to be written, and you just have to go. Initially, I actually spoke to a few of these former gang members, and I said, hey, you know, I really want to write a female gang member, and they really shut me down. No, you can't do that. Women aren't involved the way you think they are. You know, and I went home, and I was just tremendously upset about that, because this character, again, was just demanding to be written. So I thought, you know, what could I use? You know, what do I need to create the set of circumstances where I can allow this character to go on her journey? A disaster seemed like a very natural plot possibility. So when I first thought of that, I thought of, well, maybe the Northridge earthquake, which I believe was in 93, possibly 94. But the second I thought of that, I thought, oh, gosh, well, it has to be the LA riots. And I, you know, I felt relief because I knew that would allow me to write this character in the way that I wanted to. But I was also, I felt burdened, you know, because the responsibility of tackling an event as momentous as the riots is, you know, not a small thing, and certainly not something to be taken lightly. So, you know, however, it did give me that opportunity to write her story. So I did. She was the very first one I wrote, and I remember I went back to some of these people and I, you know, just gave them her story verbally. I said, well, this happens and this, and she does this. And I was expecting, again, you know, that wall of negativity. But what I instead found was genuine positivity and interest. And, you know, a number of people said, wow, you know, I like her. I understand her. I get her journey. And you know, that really gave me the impetus and really the confidence to push forward and go from there. And I wrote the other two Vera siblings right afterward, and that comprised day one. After that, it proceeded chronologically, and it really just kind of fit together naturally, because I would write, you know, each day essentially as a novella, and there would be questions at the end of a day that I knew I would have to answer the next day. So then I delved into, you know, the character of Big Fate, the gang leader, on day two, and then there's the junkie character, Creeper, on day two. It's really his journey day. And then the Korean-American high school student, John Kim, and what the difficulties and pain that he experiences in Koreatown that night, coinciding with some pretty difficult historical circumstances that went on in Koreatown that night. And I thought from there I needed a little change of pace, so I went into the nurse character, Gloria, who was there when Ernesto passes away on day one, and then the firefighter on day three. And it really just proceeded from there. It was almost as if it was kismet, you know. It just felt very fluid. Things just kind of came together, which, trust me, is incredibly rare to feel when writing. And all I did was try to go with the flow.
We're visiting with Ryan Gaddis. Ryan is the author of the novel All Involved, and this is a novel focusing on the 1992 L.A. riots. And you mentioned that you tried to go with the flow, and the book pretty much takes the reader through the flow, because as you mentioned earlier, when you introduce us to Lupe Vera, a.k.a. Bayasa, you, as the reader, reads that description of being there. You are there as the reader. You can smell that chorizo cooking. You can hear the knocking and the thought that comes to their mind as far as, you know, this can't be the police. They're knocking. It can't be the sheriffs. They're out there dealing with everybody else. And then you say, as you discuss day two, day three, day four, you take us, I mean, the book just flows, because as you start day one, you're going, well, I got to go to day two. And what happens day three? And before you know it, you've gone through the whole sequence. And you're doing a very good job of just, you're the one that wrote it. I'm not being your instructor or anything, but it just flows. The narrative just flows. And as I mentioned, I would think that as an audiobook, this would flow very nicely as well because of the way it's written.
I sure hope so. I haven't actually had the opportunity to listen to the audiobook just yet, but, you know, we had the most unique process. When Echo and HarperCollins came to me and said, look, we really want to do a special audiobook here. What are your ideas? And I went back to them and I said, well, we have to cast a bunch of different narrators, mm-hmm. you know, because as you said, there are 17 different narrators here. So it was very, very important to me that we do our best to capture the authenticity of the book in the audio version. So I said, look, you know, we definitely need a Latino narrator. We need a Latina narrator. We need an African-American narrator. We need a Caucasian-American narrator, an Asian-American narrator. And I was so, so blessed because they loved my idea and then they actually went forward with it. And I believe there are six different narrators doing the book, really helping give voice to all these different characters. But I think in a way that's also, you know, respectful to these communities that I did my utmost to capture.
As a writer, Ryan, because of the way you wrote it, and then as you mentioned, you wanted different narrators for the audiobook. When you hear the audiobook and when you hear some of this transposed from the narrative to audio and then to us listening, it used to be that we would say, well, I'm going to wait for the movie to come out. But now you go, wow, I got to hear this on audio. Or they hear the audio, then they got to go read the book because it's not just a reading anymore. It's actually drama an audio documentary.
Sure. I mean, there are always elements of interpretation, and you really hope you get those types of narrators who are willing to go there, you know, really kind of commit to the character and bring him or her to life. I think, you know, again, I haven't heard the whole audiobook, but Harper did something really incredible, and there's actually a website called allinvolvedpodcast.com, and they're actually excerpting the audiobook and allowing people to, at the very least, hear sections of it, hear some of these, you know, myriad voices that go through the piece. And the only one I've heard at this point is actually day two. I believe it's Anthony Ray Perez who's doing Big Fate, and it's chilling. It's so good. I mean, his reading is really impressive, and I think it shows this incredible, I mean, you mentioned, you know, an aspect of performance even. I mean, it captures, I think, the menace, but also the calmness and the intelligence of this character in a really wonderful way.
And it's interesting also because we know about the real situation and what happened. And as you're reading your book, you're kind of hoping that, you know, things are going to be different. Things are going to change. But you know, in reality, how the real thing happened and how that went about. So it's almost like when you're reading about the assassination of President Lincoln or President Kennedy, you're saying, no, don't go. Don't let this happen. But you know it's going to happen.
Yeah. We have that benefit of hindsight. And certainly those of us who are familiar with what happened in 92, I'd imagine that, you know, there's no way to stop those feelings. You know, if you've seen some of the news footage, if you've read anything about it, I guess that's the magic of storytelling, though. It allows us, you know, to get inside the minds and hearts of these characters and take this ride with them for however long it's going to be. And if they're well drawn, if they're well captured, then we simply can't help hoping the best. You know, certainly if we connect with them. And it was difficult, you know, because there were times when I had to make decisions about which characters would progress or be able to achieve what they wanted to achieve, which characters would not. And ultimately, I think one of the most rewarding experiences I had when I was writing it was being able to write a character who is really trying to escape this chaos. And, you know, whether or not he's able to do it, you know, I'll leave that to the readers and the listeners to hear that. But I felt it was really important to illustrate that, you know, it wasn't just what was happening. It wasn't just people sitting in their houses waiting for it to be over. Some people were actively trying to leave Los Angeles at that time, and I definitely felt I needed to tell that story too.
How does this compare, or being brought back to the real thing, as you mentioned, and hearing it on audio and watching perhaps video clips of the Rodney King incident in 1992 and 1990s, the fact that, you know, you can go there and see that, as you mentioned, our dark history continues, but perhaps there is some light that will come in later on.
Well, it's such a difficult subject. You know, the history of some of these things, you know, whether, you know, looked into, say, in a book like The New Jim Crow, you know, I think it's easy sometimes to be in the 21st century and say, oh, things have changed, it's easier now, everything's better. It's not. There is a legacy involved. And I think the thing that is worrying me more and more, at least about the incidents that we're seeing these days, whether Ferguson or Baltimore or North Carolina or Texas or even Trayvon Martin in Florida, what happened with Rodney King did indeed seem to be egregious, especially when the media cut out, you know, the very initial part of that video in terms of him resisting arrest. But Rodney King didn't die as a result of the police action against him, whereas these days we're seeing more and more frequently the deaths of young African-American men as a result of police force, and I think there's almost an escalation there that's all the more worrying and sad as a result.
We've been visiting with Ryan Gaddis. Ryan is the author of the novel All Involved, which is historical fiction, a novel based on the 1992 L.A. riots. And he takes you day by day on a journey with 17 people, and you get to read all about that. As Ryan mentioned, there's also a website that you can go to, All Involved Podcast, and you can hear part of that audiobook. And the book is available wherever you buy books and Kindles, audio, or an hardback copy if you want that. And the title, again, is All Involved. Ryan Gaddis is the author. Perspectives is taped and produced at the KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Thanks to our engineer, DJ Orozco. Our producer is Dennis Wu. You've been tuned to Perspectives. I'm Louis Sines.